Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
What's up, nerds? This is Just a Couple Arslings, the Last Kingdom podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jessica Toomer.
And I'm Alyssa Fixie. We are writers for Sci-Fi Wire's Fangirls who started recapping The Last Kingdom in season three. So we decided to bring that nerdy, horny energy to Podcastlandia. Jessica, what's up?
Alyssa. Nothing much.
Nothing. That's what's
nothing
up.
Nothing is up. That's why we've decided, I'm sure everyone will be, like, so surprised, but we've decided to cut this small talk section
It just doesn't seem like the right time. Nothing's happening that we really want to talk about. Stay inside.
Does small talk
wear a
even
mask,
exist?
Wash your hands. Yeah. That's it.
Do what you need to do to stay safe. And we're just going to, like, get right into The Last Kingdom because that's all any of us care about these days.
Right, little escapism, which, you know, when your escapism is a show where people are dying and getting murdered and going to war, that I think that tells you a little something about what life is like today. I'm like man, I wish I could go to sea and get in a shipwreck. It'd be better than, you know, what's happening. Yeah. So anyway.
It's bleak, but you know what? We're not going to judge ourselves right now. So, yeah, let's get into it. This episode, I mean, probably one of the hardest episodes to watch, to be honest.
I mean, we've had some pretty devastating deaths on The Last Kingdom, but I think this one might be the worst.
It's definitely the worst. I mean,
yeah,
it's so hard because it makes me, like, kind of go back and think about, you know, Beoka in every season and how he's just, like, kind of grown on us. This episode, such a big loss with Beoka.
Huge.
It's so devastating. Like, watching the episode, so, you know, just to recap, in case, like, it's so traumatic that you've blacked it out, Whitgar, you know, threatens to kill young Uhtred, and Beoka ends up stepping in front of him and taking the crossbow. And
which is just
the heart.
Like, that's the most Beoka way to die. You know what I mean? Like,
God,
looking out
it.
For Uhtred, protecting others, putting himself on the line. He was a real one to the end, even though, you know, obviously he had his moments where we weren't always on Team Beoka. For the most part, he's been, like, such a constant in Uhtred's life for so long, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, like, without Beoka, like, what does Uhtred do now? He's his last link to, like, who he was, you know, like, his relationship with Breeda is over and she's, like, crazy now. And, you know, everybody else is gone. So Beoka was his real last link to Bebbanburg and who he wanted to return to. And so that's a devastating loss.
I've lost every family I had. Beoka was always there, the only constant. Without Beoka, I have no home.
It's so sad, but so kind of on point with the character that Beoka, one, he goes out sacrificing his life for young Uhtred. And he does it in Bebbanburg, but he tries for peace first, which mm-hmm. is always, like, what, you know, he's been about. And he kind of pleads to Whitgar to kind of put the past behind them and, you know, take on the Scots together. And, of course, this dude is like, this is the North. We don't do peace. What a weird flex, first of
yeah.
all. Like, we are committed to just fighting and bloodshed till the day we die. Like, good
chaos
for you. I don't
always.
Know.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. But, he also was like, you know what, this Uhtred is like a stranger here. We don't need him. And I'm like, dude, you've been like sailing the seven seas for decades.
Right.
Like, you don't belong here either. So
right.
it's really sweet that Beoka tries, but it's just like, this is Aelfrich's son through and through. Like, he's not going to listen. And so, you know, Byoko has to make the ultimate sacrifice, and it's brutal. He kind of falls to the mud, and it's slow-mo, and it's, like, muffled background, and then you see Uhtred kind of lose it, and it's like, can we make this death any more traumatic?
No, it is peak drama, peak trauma. It's just, it's a brutal one. And so, you know, Uhtred starts slashing and showing people
as
the
you
sword.
Do.
Right. You know, when you're filled with an unholy rage at the death of your mentor, you know, you got to take it out on some baddies.
Right.
But yeah, so they have this fight and Uhtred is like really struggling and Finnan, I mean, they have to get out of there because they're never going to be able to take on Whitgar's forces. And so they got to get back to their ship through the sea gate. And like Uhtred just, he doesn't want to leave Bayoka's body behind. He doesn't want to stop fighting. And Finnan basically has to drag him out of there or they're all going to die.
Yeah. Thank God Finnan is there, you know, because
thank God for Finnan in this episode. Like,
seriously.
I mean, for real. But yeah, they have to flee and they, it is a rough ship ride. So,
my God. And once again, I'm like, we're crying on a rowboat. Like,
right.
The season two, like, slave ship vibes.
Yes.
It's like I thought we had gotten past this, but it's like,
never.
Time is a flat circle. We're coming
right.
back, you know?
yeah.
But yeah, it's, so that's obviously devastating. And we switch from that to, you know, all of the kind of chaos that's happening in Mercia. And Edward learns that Ethelred is invading East Anglia, and he's left Mercia undefended. And, you know, everyone is trying to, aside from Ethelhelm, everyone is trying to get Edward to kind of come to Mercia's aid. He's promised, you know, allegiance. And even though Ethelred's not there, the people are there, and they're what really
right.
matters. And, you know, it's Edward's, you know, concerned about the hills. And Canute's cunning, like, battle strategy, which, like, fair. But, yeah, I just knew that Edward was going to turn his back on Mercia. Like, he's all about Wessex right now. It's so...
Yeah, he doesn't take his sister or his mother's counsel into account at all. Like, you know, I think he struts around thinking that he's a big king now, but he really is just doing the bidding of Æthelhelm at this point. Like, he does not... He wants to think that he has his own backbone, but he really... I mean, he really doesn't. Like, Æthelhelm, his father-in-law, is just like, all right, this is what I want to happen. I'm going to flatter the king until he does it. And I think in this episode, Aelswyth kind of realizes how bad the situation is, really. Like, she realizes that Edward is not going to listen to her. He's not going to listen to Æthelflaed. And he's really not going to concern himself with sacrificing Mercians in order to do what he wants with Wessex. And I think Æthelflaed realizes that, too. Like, she realizes that she's not going to get Edward on her side without a little leverage. So she basically tells her mom, all right, I have to do this for my people. And so she leaves to go and raise the Mercian Fjords to sort of fight back against Canute, because obviously Æthelred's not going to do it. So,
yeah,
she's taking matters into her own hands because she is the lady of Mercia.
Yeah, it's up to her to, like, save, you know, the whole fucking kingdom. Yeah, I just, this whole interaction, Edward is such, like, he's such a stubborn man-child this season. I don't understand, you know, how he's grown into this kind of sexist, egotistical jerk. Because I just didn't feel like who he was, like, in the past few seasons. I thought maybe he was making strides to be, obviously, to be a different king than Alfred, but not necessarily a worse one.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, like, you know it's bad when you have to have, like, Father Purelig over here saying, like, you know, doing metaphors like Mercia burns like a lighted fart. Like,
right.
Trying to convince you to, like,
if
come
to
their
convince
aid.
You that things are bad, nothing will.
I mean, that's, like, true poetry right there. I don't know any other, like, battle cry that he could have given.
Edward
so it's just all depressing. And the one thing I do, like, really love about how terrible Edward is and what that means for the show is that it's really, like, bonding Aelswyth and Æthelflaed. Because
for sure.
Aelswyth, you know, has that connection to Mercia. She's of Mercia. And Æthelflaed takes her responsibility to Mercia so seriously. I mean, I think more seriously than any other kind of queen who didn't come from that land would. And so they are, like, all in to, you know, save this kingdom and also to save, like, Alfred's vision. And I like that the show is bringing them together because they're two strong women. They go about things differently, but I think that's going to be a benefit to them this season.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But yeah, everybody's kind of a mess this episode. Like, you know, Uhtred and his men, they wash up on shore and, you know, Uhtred is dealing with this profound level of grief. And he can't, like, he cannot be a leader right now. Like, he is too sort of overcome with the loss of Beoka that he can't lead his men in order to find them food, find them silver, find them shelter. And so, you know, it's really, it's not looking great for him right now, but it's not looking great for anybody, really. Like, you know, Canute's, you know, going through Mercia and killing villagers and burning it all to the ground. And Æthelred's not doing anything about it. And, you know, I'm actually this season, I'm really interested in the siblings in Edith and Eardwulf because they're both sort of playing Æthelred for their own gain, but they're not particularly good at it.
So here's the thing. I think Edith could be really good at it. I think she's probably used to being able to manipulate men a little bit easier. I think Æthelred is so entitled and so kind of rotten to his core. She's underestimated maybe just how terrible he is.
I mean, if you can't tell that he's terrible based on the deep V and horrible crown he's been swanning around in, like,
seriously,
come on.
But, you know, I think she thought maybe, I don't know, I could see where she'd be like, oh, I can just, like, string him along and I'll never have to, like, commit and because he's just a jerk. I don't want to be with him, but I need to use him. But Æthelred he's stupid, but he's dangerous. You know what I mean? And so I think Edith is more maybe prepared than Eardwulf is. I think Eardwulf is so – he's got tunnel vision about what he wants out of this kind of partnership.
For sure. And
he's willing, obviously, he's willing to do anything to get it, but he's so kind of like gung-ho to get in good with Æthelred that he makes some decisions that, like, obviously backfire. I mean, if it were me, I wouldn't be the one, especially if Heston had come to me and been like, here's some insider information, you should make a battle strategy over this. That wouldn't have been my play. I would have told someone else to suggest it.
Nope, so nobody way, has like, gotten him up
yourself.
To speed. Right. Nobody's gotten him up to speed on never trust Heston. So that's on
Isn't that
that's
like
on
the first
them.
Rule of like
it
Viking
should be.
Life?
Right. If you're a Saxon or if you're a Viking, just don't trust Heston. Never.
Don't trust
which,
Heston.
You know, we see more later on in the episode too. But yeah, sure. I think Æthelred is a really bad combination of stupid and vicious, which can be particularly dangerous. Everybody's in a bad place this episode. It's a real heartbreaker.
It's hard. I think like especially watching Uhtred like
really
question
mourn.
Himself so much. Yeah. He's obviously grieving. I mean, he's like, it's to the point where he wants to go on a walkabout by himself.
Right.
It's like we've entered like the take care era of Uhtred's emotional journey.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, hip hop emo boy like Drake over here. He's just so like up in his feelings about it. And I get it because, I mean, he's lost basically like a father figure. And how do you and he's lost him in the worst way possible, you know. When Beoka was trying to do something for them both, but obviously that was a kind of mission that Uhtred had launched.
Sure.
And so, yeah, it's bad. And
I think it's compounded by the fact that they failed so badly in Bebbanburg, too.
Sure.
Like, they didn't take it back. So not only did he lose Beoka, he also lost his hope for ever getting back to his home. So that's a pretty potent 1-2 punch. And Uhtred is definitely, you know, dealing with the guilt and he's dealing with the sorrow of losing his family and his home. And, you know, he tells Finan, without Beoka, I have no home. Which I think if I'd been Finnan and like been on the run with Uhtred for so long and like built a home in Cookham, I'd be a little taken aback at that statement. But like, you know, he lets him feel his feelings, and that's important.
Finnan is so like selfless, and he's just the best. Like, I think
It was a great Finnan episode for sure.
It was so good. And I think he sees his friend hurting, and he knows, I mean, whatever Uhtred says, it's not like going to be well thought out. And so, yeah, you could take that the wrong way. But I think Finnan knows, like, Uhtred's just in a bad spot. And he's saying a lot of things that he doesn't mean. Like, I don't think he really wants to abandon his men. I don't think he's necessarily done with fighting. I think he's just having that moment of, after such a big loss, as anyone would, of taking stock of his life and what he's been doing with it, and if he needs to like continue or try a different path. And so I think it's like a mark of a good friend to stick through him, you know, or stick with him through that.
Sure. I think at this point, Uhtred is feeling a lot of shame. I think he puts a lot of stock in his reputation and his ability as a warrior and the fact that he is Uhtred of Bebbanburg. And so the fact that, you know, he went to go take it back and he thought it was going to be a pretty simple thing, and he couldn't do it. So I think that sort of, I don't think he wants to leave his men. I think he doesn't feel worthy to lead them right now. And, you know, Finnan kind of leaves him to, feel that, emotional turmoil. And he goes and sort of not takes control, but sort of steps up and is like, all right, Uhtred can't handle things right now. I'll take care of it. Cytric, you go find provisions. Here's all the, jewelry that we can scrabble together to, get some food. And, Finnan.
A surprising amount of jewelry.
Yeah, a lot of rings. A lot of rings. Yeah, a lot of bracelets.
It's not a bad haul.
They're fancy boys and they like their bling. And luckily that works out for them so they can eat. But yeah, Finnan really, really steps up when Uhtred needs him. And it's pretty great.
Yeah. And so, while he's kind of taking control of things as they plan to head back south, in Wessex, Æthelhelm is like kind of just ensuring his place of power by nipping at the bonds between Edward and his family. And he does that. He's so devious. And he does that when they're having dinner. And he kind of pipes up as Aelswyth is trying to convince Edward again to like go save Mercia. He's like, oh, I thought you said Æthelflaed was going to a nunnery. My daughter like went and checked and she's not there. And he basically,
this whole family, they just suck. Like the father and the daughter, they just need to go get out of here.
Like, who are you to keep tabs on the Queen of Mercia, dude? Like, come on. Your daughter married the king. That's it.
Right.
But yeah, so Aelswyth, has to come clean, and she tells Edward that Æthelflaed is heading to Mercia to fight the Danes, which honestly is something her cowardly brother should already be doing. And she tells him about the plan for Tettenhall, and so Aelswyth was really smart this episode in a way I didn't think. I know she's cunning and she's a good schemer. I didn't know that she had that much, battle strategy knowledge, but she gives Æthelflaed like a really good idea of going to this valley and leading the Danes there, because that means, your numbers don't have to be as great because you're not fighting like on an open plain or on hills or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, she's told Æthelflaed to raise the Fjords and go there. And she tells Edward the same thing. Like, that's where your sister's going. That's where you need to be.
There is a valley in Tettenhall where lesser numbers might stand a chance. This is where you must force the Danes to fight.
The Fjords will not be enough. I will need Edward's aid.
When you're gone, I will speak to him. Your brother will not abandon you.
Aelswyth, whether she would like to admit it or not, I think she's learned a lot of that from Uhtred, at least maybe not directly, but she listened, you know, she paid attention when Alfred made plans and when Alfred, you know, did things. And Alfred got a lot of his battle strategy straight from Uhtred. So,
oh yeah,
whether she'd like to admit it or not, Aelswyth
She will never admit it.
But can I just say that I'm like loving Aelswyth's journey this season? Like, oh it God, has been
it's killing me. But yeah, I agree.
I know. Like, for the longest time, like, I mean, if anybody's listened to our old episodes, we were definitely not team Aelswyth. Like, you know, she's a great foil, but like, geez, like, she caused a lot of problems for a lot of people, especially Uhtred, who is our fave. Mm. But like, this season, she is really like stepping up and realizing that she can't just defer to the king on everything, because a lot of the time he's wrong and people are going to die because of that. And I'm kind of loving it.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see this kind of battle shaping up between her and Ethelhelm.
Yeah.
Because they're both kind of, they're fighting. It's interesting because they're fighting almost for the same thing. Obviously, they want Wessex to be safe and to be strong, and they want a united England. Mm-hmm. I think Ethelhelm does want that because that means he would have more power. But I think they're going about it different ways. So Aelswyth obviously, you know, sees the importance of allies as the biggest, you know, thing to fight the Danes with. And Ethelhelm is over here telling Edward, you know, let's stay in Wessex. Let Ethelred face Cnut. He's probably going to die. And that takes care of one problem. And then, you know, then we can take on Cnut ourselves. He'll already have gone to battle with Ethelred. So maybe some of his men will be dead. And, you know, then you win and you're king of all England, because there's no king in Mercia. There's no king in East Anglia. You know, it's just going to be you. And then, you know, that's the united England that your father dreamed of. The only problem is it means you're going to have to sacrifice your sister. So not cool with that plan.
And a lot of people along the way. Right.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
It matters how you get what you want. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. It's not just you get it.
Right. And you would think that he would have learned that from his father, because that was like Alfred's whole deal is like, you know, I want to accomplish this, but I'm not going to do it in a way that I'm not going to do it in a way that goes against my principles. You know, he has some occasional Danish influence when it was particularly dire. But for the most part, you know, he really stayed true to his vision. But yeah, and I, you know, I don't think Edward is really like taking the threat of the Danes as seriously as he should. You know, we see a little bit of what's going on with like Breeda and Cnut's camp, and like Breeda's doing some witchy shit to find out if she's pregnant, and
love
she
it.
Is. The curse is broken. You know, it's kind of a bummer that she got the kid that she wanted with Cnut, who sucks. Yeah. And so they're, you know, talking about taking over all of England and sitting on Edward's throne. And, you know, I think it's like super interesting that she brings it back to Ragnar again. I'm like, they brought up Ragnar twice in this episode. And I'm just like waiting for that moment when it comes out that like Cnut was the one who really did the killing. Like he didn't, you know, pull the knife, but he made it happen. So,
oh yeah,
I'm just,
it's going to be huge.
I'm ready for that, man. It's going to be so good. It's not going great for anybody. Especially because, you know, Edward, he sends out that messenger to Athelred's camp and lets him know, hey, things are getting really bad in Mercia. You might want to take care of that because your kingdom has basically fallen to the Danes. And he gives that message to Eardwulf, who does not handle it well.
No. Panics a little bit. It's a panic kill.
Who hasn't murdered a messenger in a panic state? It happens.
The stress can get to you in ninth century times. He knows how damaging this is for him, because he's the one who told Ethelred, we should go invade East Anglia, expand your kingdom. The Danes are gone. And all of that was a lie. And so he kills this guy.
His sister witnesses it.
His sister sees. And it's like, this whole interaction, it's so gross, but it's also just like so hilarious, because here's this dude. He's so kind of powerless and pathetic at this point, because he knows like his head is like, you know, going to be off his shoulders soon. And here's his sister who's like, all right, I guess I'll finally bang him and maybe it'll put him in a good mood for you to tell him. I'm like, this is a terrible plan, but sure, yeah. Go ahead. I don't know.
She's like, I'll try and mitigate as much as I can, but you're on your own, buddy. Like, you know, there's only so many falls she can take for him.
Yeah. So. I mean, if you're like plan B, if your safety net is to like pimp your sister out to like this king that you're trying
he is so creepily excited about pimping his sister out too, which is just,
oh yeah,
it's really deeply upsetting.
Yeah, it's weird. To be fair, he tried to pimp himself out to Ethelred,
right?
And Ethelred,
he tried.
I guess, isn't interested, but yeah, ugh. It's just such a strange like family. I don't know. It does give me major Lannister vibes. I'm not going to lie.
I get that too. Yes, 100%. They are Lannisters trying to manage an even worse Robert Baratheon. Like, it's not. It's a lot.
Yeah. Edith,
yeah.
She ends up having to do it.
Yeah. I mean, everything about Ethelred is just the worst. And it really, that was not a consensual situation, and it was just very upsetting. I hate him,
it's
and
weird.
I hope he dies.
Yeah, and obviously, like, I did not enjoy watching that. I mean, who would? But it's weird that, like, I don't know, that scene for me mirrored, you know, the scene with Ethelred and Ethelfled on their wedding night, where it was
oh,
like,
for sure.
You know what I mean? I just thought that was interesting that they chose to have it go down that way, and I wonder what it means, like, going forward with this character Edith, and I don't know. I read too much into it, but
I don't know if you read too much into it. I think it just means that like Ethelred does not have consensual sex. Like every
he's
sexual contact he has distinct rape vibes.
Well, because he's so like insecure about himself that he has to establish dominance.
Right, it's all
any
about power.
Way he can. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true.
It was a lot.
God, what a turd.
Ready for him to die. I'm hoping he doesn't survive the season. I'm sick of that dude. Just get him out of here.
So tired of him. Also tired of Heston, who shows up this episode. But honestly, I was not upset to see Heston.
No, I think he's always an interesting element in like anything. But before we get to Heston, I do want to talk about that moment where young Uhtred and Uhtred sort of blow up at each other in the woods. Uhtred's dealing with his grief in his own way. And young Uhtred is like, you know, he's praying for Beoka because that's what he knows. Like, that is what he was raised with. And honestly, that's probably what Beoka would want too. Like, having somebody pray for him, like, that would, you know, that would mean a lot to him. But Uhtred sort of sees it as an affront, and you know, he sort of sees it as, you know, well, Beoka's god didn't save him, so why are you bothering with this shit? And you know, it's just, it's a really tense moment between the two of them. And you know, you kind of felt for a little while that they were maybe taking some strides, but again, I feel like a lot of their interactions this season are going to be like two steps forward, one step back, and this definitely felt like a little bit of a step back. But again, Finan comes in clutch, and you know, he urges young Uhtred to stay, and he really sticks up for Uhtred and tells him, he's like, listen, like, your dad's had to deal with a lot. Like, yeah, your life has been hard too, but like, it's nothing compared to his. And he's, you know, built this legacy up from nothing. So the least you could do is give him a little respect about it. Finan's really keeping the team together.
Dude, I need me a hype man like Finan.
Right? Everyone can use one.
Not only is he telling you that you're the best, he's also telling everyone else that you're the best after you've just, like, faced the biggest, like, loss and failure of your life.
Yeah.
I think there's also, you know, it's an interesting conversation that he has with young Uhtred about, you know, what his father has sacrificed, but also that whole argument that Uhtred has, you know, with his son. Young Uhtred sees it so differently than how Finan explains it to him. And I think that was really crucial. It was a crucial step in young Uhtred kind of understanding his father, because he thinks, you know, his father is blowing up at him because he's like the physical embodiment of everything he's lost now. And of course, that's how you would think, especially as a teenager. It's like, it's all my fault because, you know, as a teenager, everything revolves around you. And it's really nice to see Finn and be like, you're so young. You have no idea. But right. like your dad looks at you and he sees everything that's happened and he sees it as a failure of his on his own part to not, mm-hmm. you know, be able to protect you. Like, that's what he's upset about. And yeah. so, yeah, it's just another like nice little bridge that Finn is kind of building between them, you know, maybe without really even realizing it. But I liked that idea that these two men, they care a lot about each other, but they see each other, they see their problems in such different ways. Yeah. And it's really about kind of, yeah, giving some empathy and understanding to each other, which they end up doing later in the episode.
They do. They find really some nice. Common ground. I also really yeah. loved that moment where Uhtred is, he's up on the hill, always on these hills, and he sort of buries so Baoka's cross. And so he, you know,
the
he
hill can't have, at like sunset.
Yes, you know, very cinematic
background. Yeah,
very cinematic. And you know, Finn comes up to see him, and you know, Uhtred is like, "Oh my God!" You know, he doesn't have a grave; he's going to be cursed. And Finn's like, "You idiot! You know, don't think that he's with God. He's with Tira. He's gonna, you know, he's in peace now, and he wouldn't want you to be so tore up from the floor up all the time." So
yeah,
you know. They have that, you know, they have that moment where, you know, Finn tells him, like, this isn't the end. Like, this is, we're going to be okay.
It's yeah, he's got to give him a little bit of tough love. Yeah.
Right. He's like, listen, it's going to be super hard, but, you know, it's worth it to keep fighting. And that's what Baoka would want. And so at that, you know, Uhtred rallies a little bit. He's obviously not up to his full fighting strength, but he's at least a little bit more himself when they run into Heston, who, you know, always loves to get under Uhtred's skin. So it's it always promises to be an adventure whenever they cross paths.
I mean, I'll say this for Heston, like, he always brings like the juiciest goss. And so
yeah, he sucks, but like, I love him and I hope he's around until the last episode because Heston is the best pot stirrer we have.
He's like the Gretchen Wieners of like the Viking world.
His hair is like so dirty big.
Because it's full of secrets. Yeah.
Exactly.
But so they run into Heston. He's like taking, you know, all of his kin away from the fighting because that's just not who he is anymore.
Right. And he has Canute's sons, which is pretty important.
Yeah. Canute's twins. It's obviously a very tense meeting, mostly because Heston just loves like any opportunity to kind of dig at Uhtred. And so
Uhtred and his pretty boys.
God, he like insults Ethelflaed, which is the quickest way to like flip the switch.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it was really important for Uhtred to connect with Heston because he learns a couple of things. Like he learns that Heston has Canute's sons. He's supposed to mm-hmm. be, like, protecting them and keeping them away from the fighting. He learns that Ethelflaed is heading to Mercia to meet the Danes in this valley, which, thank God, because, you know, she needs some help in that battle.
Yeah.
And I think probably the most important thing, which, like, I literally gasped out loud when Heston finally told
me
Uhtred,
too.
Because I was like, no way this is coming so soon. No way. And but he tells him, he's like, Canute is the one who, like, you know, led that knife. Like, he's the one who had Ragnar killed and who whispered in Ethelwald's ear. And it was all a plan to kind of take Ragnar's seat, to take Breida. Like, that was all his scheming. And it was so crazy just to see, like, finally someone who it really matters to, the truth matters to see them learn it was just, it was so cool. And then I was like immediately worried because Uhtred goes like straight to, oh yeah, you got his boys with you though. And I'm like,
I know,
is Uhtred
going to
kill some kids? Like,
right.
I don't know.
Taking kids hostage is like one step. You could tell that Baby Monk was like, yikes.
What
I thought
doing?
You were done with this. but at the same time, I also thought that like getting this information showed, you know, how far Uhtred has come over the seasons because, you know, old Uhtred would have like freaked out. And, you know, it would have been his only mission was to kill Canute now. Like, he would have to avenge Ragnar at this moment, and he wouldn't play it tactically. But now sure. you can sort of see like Uhtred take the mental note of that knowledge and like tuck it away into his brain and be like, all right, I'll handle that later. Right now I have to go deal with Mercia because shit is bad mm-hmm. there. So that, you know, that sort of level of, I guess, not self-involvement, this lack of self-involvement. It's such good growth. I was so proud of him. But you know, he's still taking some captives, even though they're children, because, you know, he's still pragmatic. Right.
He's allowed to, like, give into his feelings a little bit and take a couple of twins hostage. Like, come on.
Right.
I agree. I was really impressed that he didn't just fly off the handle, just because that's such a... I don't know. That's a huge kind of reveal and a huge, you know, twist to what he... he thought he was done with it. He thought he had given Ragnar peace and he had avenged his death. That was such a guiding kind of force last season. So to see him react kind of almost calmly to it and to think about how he was going to play it was... I was feeling it. And then, of course, I'm excited because he's going to Mercy and he's going to see Ethelfled, and our girl really needs some help.
I do have one question, though. I'm sure you will not have an answer. How does Uhtred keep his undercut so sharp when they're on the road? Like, there's not a speck of growth on that head in the places where it needs to be shaved.
Him, Citric.
Citric, yeah.
Finan.
Right.
Like, all of them. Like, just the cleanest lines. I don't know.
All of these cuts.
Do they have, like, a barber that travels?
Surely one of their dudes must, like, carry a razor and be like, all right, guys, let's take 20 and, you know, give you a quick cleanup. Because there is no way that those fades would be so sharp without maintenance. I'm impressed.
And there's also a lot of... there's a lot of bead work and a lot of braiding in these hairstyles. I can't imagine you sleep on the ground once.
Right.
You know, all that's going to be ruined. You got to redo it every day.
Right.
So,
you know, battle prep is, you know, there's got to be a lot of presentation. So,
it is. But. It's all about presentation. This, like, Viking warlord life.
Right.
I would not fare well.
Right. Which is probably why Osferth just stuck with his monk haircut, because he just does not want to have to deal with that shit all the time. Like, who wants to deal with braids and undercut shaving every day? Like, absolutely not.
Yeah. I think the monk, like, bowl cut is basically like our version of the messy bob.
Right.
You just cut it real short and
he didn't want to commit to bangs, so he just kept the bob.
We figured it out for sure.
Right. There we go. But before they head to Mercia, I really loved this scene between Uhtred and young Uhtred where they finally it was really good. Where they finally find some common ground with their love of Gisla. You know, young Uhtred talks about how he remembers, you know, when his dad left to go to battle and his mom told him, like, the reason he goes is to fight for who he loves. So he's, you know, he's fighting for us and it feels like he's abandoning you, but really he's doing everything he can to keep you safe. And that may not look exactly like you want it to, but it's how he knows how to do it. And, you know, they talk about how they, you know, how they both remember her and miss her so much. And that, you know, I think, again, we can bring a lot of this back to Finan. And I think that young Uhtred, in seeing how his men responded to his dad's, you know, needing a minute and how he saw that they were still so willing to follow him when he's, you know, when Uhtred felt like he wasn't worthy of being a leader anymore, but his men knew that he was. And I think that did a lot for young Uhtred in coming around to his dad's, you know, side, because, you know, I think how people respond to you when you're not at your best says a lot about what that relationship is. And, you know, we saw that Cook and Crew is ride or die for him, even when he's having a really bad time. And even when he suffers some, you know, pretty major failure, they're still, you know, they know what he's about. They know what he's done for them and they're going to follow him to the end. And
I mean, if they can survive like last season with Skade and the curse, like,
right,
they can survive this like little emo phase, you know, like I think they've been through worse. This is a terrible loss, especially for Uhtred, but they've been through a lot of hard shit. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think seeing how, you know, his men react to him, I think also just being with his dad. I mean, he's been like, he was sent away to a monastery, you know, after his family was like lost, his mom died. And, I think it was probably easier, you know, when he was there to view his dad as just this kind of terrible person and this heathen and all these things, because that's what he was being fed. And I think maybe being with him, seeing how he interacts with people. Yeah. So I think, yeah, that's a really sweet moment. And we have like more sweet moments. We have, you know, Æthelflaed and Uhtred reuniting in Mercia, and he's a little shocked that she's like kind of there, like with maybe 10 men. I don't know, you know, and he's like, what are you doing? You don't need to be on your own. I'm here to like help you. And they plan to kind of ride off together and face the Danes. And Aelswith is back in Wessex doing her part. And it's so interesting because I think right now she knows like Edward is just not reliable. And so she goes to Peerlyg and she's like, look, we need help. We need allies. And Edward's not going to do it. Like, I know that this puts you in danger, but what is your life worth, you know, if you're not spending it, if you're not using it to better your country? And right. So her plan is to get a message to the Welsh king, because if Edward's not going to give Æthelflaed an army, maybe he will. And have we... Okay, I'm having an issue remembering if we've met this Welsh king.
I think it's a new player. We have not had any dealings with Wales up to this point, I don't think.
Okay, I thought I would remember if we had.
Yeah, I do not think we have met the Welsh king yet, so... Okay. Yeah, so she's plotting that. Æthelflaed and Uhtred are planning on, you know, riding out to join the Fjords. And then we see this new guy rock up at the end. And, like, I couldn't really tell, like, where he was showing up. But that guy looks to be trouble with his army. Mm. So, got another
capital
threat.
T.
Love it.
I don't think the Welsh king.
No, it's not. I don't think it's the Welsh king. I think he's maybe a new Dane. They had real Dane vibes. So
yeah.
We'll see, man. We'll
it
see.
It was the hair.
Yeah, that hair. That is not Saxon hair.
Yeah.
Well, we have something a little bit special for you in this episode. We have more of our interview with Alexander Draymond to talk about everything episode 3, especially the loss of Baeoka. So here's a little bit of that. Check it out.
So we need to talk about episode 3 because a lot happens.
Because
a lot
Baeoka.
Of devastating. Oh my God. Okay.
Rip my heart out.
It was a lot. And yeah, in this episode, like, Uhtred deals with a level of failure that we haven't really seen him have to deal with before. You know, there was a failure to protect the people that he loves and a failure to retain his birthright. Like, he's dealt with loss and defeat before, but this was just such a 1-2 punch at Bebbanburg. Like, how does this affect him on his journey forward?
He had a really bad hair day that episode.
Just awful.
I like that he had to deal with so much loss, because, I mean, with so much failure, not loss, but failure, because I think it's just not believable that he always wins, and
right.
Especially something that is so important to him. I like that we got so close and then, you know, we couldn't quite get there. Mm. Obviously, Baeoka is devastating, and on and off screen, by the way. We all miss Ian Hart, and those scenes with him are such a joy to do, because he's just such a wonderful, phenomenal actor that I've learned so much from over the years, and not having him anymore is just like David Dawson. It's devastating for us on set and for the show, but you know, it's the name of the game. Like, people have to go, unfortunately.
Well, I feel like they're really punishing you this season, Alex. Like, they're taking away all of your friends.
I know. They haven't dared touch Uhtred's gang.
Yeah.
Because they know that I
absolutely not.
Riots in the streets, man. Yeah. No, I was gonna say ask, you know, if it was hard to say goodbye to Ian, but I'm wondering instead, do you remember like the last scene you shot with Ian and what that was like, that kind of last day?
The last scene that we shot with Ian was him lying in the mud.
Shot in sequence.
Yeah, it was the last scene, and you know, that made my job a lot easier because I it was very easy for me to cry over him because I knew that he was gonna go, but I think he didn't enjoy it too much. Just all these crazy people fighting around him and jumping around, and you don't know if you're going to get trampled on or not. And you're lying in the cold, wet mud. It wasn't his favorite moment of the show, I presume. But yeah, that was the last one. Yeah.
Okay, so cool. Thank you, Alexander. Really informative. And also, he just sounds so much more put together than we do on a normal daily basis. So thanks. And we'll be having more with him later. So stay tuned and check that out.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So now it's time for our next episode wishes. This is when we issue our demands for upcoming episodes, like the spoiled toddlers that we are. Here's what we want to see, when we want to see it, and why we won't be denied. Melissa?
Okay, so, you know, now that Uhtred has sort of lost his past in Bayoka and also in Babenberg a little bit, but hopefully he gets a chance to retake that. But I'm really excited to see how, like, this change will sort of push him towards his future with his son. You know, the conflict between these two has been one of my favorite parts of this season, because I think it's the side of Uhtred that we haven't really seen yet. And, you know, at the end of this episode, they kind of reach a place with a little bit more understanding. And so I anticipate like big and emotional things happening for them in the future. And I'm really stoked to see it. Plus, I hope to continue to see Athelflaed just take absolutely zero shit from the men in her life. Like, she doesn't care what her brother says. She doesn't care what her husband says. She is a queen and she will do what she must to take care of her people. And I'm just like, I'm living for that. It's the best.
So independent. Really brave. I cannot relate to that part because I'd be like, yeah, I'm cool. I'm cool with staying in Wessex and decorating my like brother's palace. Who cares? Yeah. But, you know, I hate to say it. I think I'm really excited to see more of Aelswyth this season.
100%. Yes.
We've talked about it a bit. I think, you know, she's always been good at scheming. Normally her plans are kind of like directly opposed to our faves. So I've never really appreciated how smart she is. Mm. But I think seeing her, you know, work with Athelflaed and Peerelig to kind of ensure Alfred's vision, I don't know. I got like goosies. Like it was really cool to see her taking charge. I mean, she's experienced. She's been in that palace for a long time and she's seen a lot of shit. And so I think she's, you know, a dangerous opponent to have. If I were Ethelhelm or the Danes, I'd be worried about her.
Yeah, I think they're really underestimating her, and I think she should definitely use that to her advantage. So, The Last Kingdom has a massive cast of interesting characters, and nearly everyone gets their time to shine. Our arsling of the episode is the character who truly goes above and beyond to win the war or simply win our hearts. Jessica, who was your arsling this week? I can guess, but I mean, who is your arsling this episode?
We've said it before. Like, there's no, like, better wingman than our favorite bearded Irishman, Finnan. Yeah. Like, he comes through this episode. He gets Uhtred and the team out of Babenberg. he, you know, inspires everyone. He gives his bros plenty of pep talks on the journey south. Most importantly, I think he helps to kind of mend that rift between young Uhtred and his father.
Sure.
Because I don't think a lot of that kind of bonding session in the tent would have happened, you know, if we didn't have our emotionally woke potato pancake to speak some sense into his friends.
Yes.
And also, like, hello, Mark Rowley. Like, who told you you could act your ass off this season?
Like, he's crushing it.
You gotta prepare us for that.
I know. He's crushing it this season. It's been a big one, and he deserves it.
Yeah,
like, you know, it's hard to imagine anyone better than Finnan at this point. But I'm going to have to, you know, pour one out for Baoka. Like, he died in the most Baoka way possible, you know, sacrificing himself for Uhtred. And he's going to be missed. Like, he was such an integral part of Uhtred and of the show. So I'm curious to see, like, how they carry on without him as such a linchpin. And, you know, I think Uhtred's going to carry this wound for a long time. And he should. Like, Baoka did so much for him over the years. You know, I don't want him to immediately forget. But yeah, Baoka,
you were a real one.
He was a real one. He's my arsling of this episode.
And I think that's like an interesting thing too, to think like, how do these kind of events unfold without Baoka? Because he was such a, you know, he was a character that really kind of crossed the aisle and tried to make peace and united people that wouldn't have worked well together. So,
yeah. And I think he, with the loss of Alfred, like, he was always such a go-between between Alfred and Uhtred. And so I think without Alfred being there narratively, Baoka didn't have as much to do. So, like, unfortunately, it made sense for him to die. But, like, that still sucks.
Ugh, we'll miss you. We'll miss you, Baoka. Get ready to shame none the worst character of the episode with us. It doesn't matter if you're a Saxon or a Dane. Anyone can be a turd, and we're calling out the biggest one of the week. So, Alyssa, go first.
For me, I'm returning to one of our old standbys, Athelred. I'm getting real sick of him. He's just, you know, flouncing around in his ridiculous outfits. I hate his crown so much. It just looks like one of those crowns that, like, you'd go and buy at Party City when you want to look like a douchebag on Halloween. Like, right? I hate him so much.
And it keeps tilting to one side. Like, every time we see him, it's more tilted. It's like,
It doesn't fit him. He is not suited to be king, and even his ugly crown knows that. But he's leading his people into ruin. He's threatening to kill Athelflaed. He rapes Edith. Like, this guy's got to go, and, like, soon. I'm over
100%.
It.
Yeah.
Need him to die.
I need him to die. I'd be fine with having his current bestie die too. Like, I get that Erdwyf is, like, under a lot of pressure because of the whole, you know, my dad used to horse hump thing. I don't know. But he's really starting to kind of rival Ethelred's, like, level of deviousness.
Fair.
And I think, you know, Edith seems to have some moral integrity and she understands there's a limit and there's a line not to cross. I think Erdwyf has no qualms about killing innocents or lying to his king or pimping out his sister, like, if it means he gets what he wants. And so that kind of selfishness is just, like, not a good look, no matter what century you're in.
No character is safe on The Last Kingdom, but some seem to be flirting with death more than others. 9th century life was fleeting and barbaric, but that doesn't mean we can't have some fun with it. Get ready to place your bets on who's headed to Valhalla soon, because this is the Viking Death Pool. All right, Jessica, who's going to die? Who needs to die?
Okay, I want to, like, make it known that we did guess that Baoka was going to die
in the
first episode, and we were right, and we have not watched, like, we're really torturing ourselves this season. So I just want to say,
it was a terrible
choice.
Kind of
a mini congrats. Yeah. Like, I'm not happy about it, but also, you know, pay attention to this section because we seem to be, like, clairvoyant.
We're witches. It's fine.
We are. It's gonna come out anyway. Let's just say it. I think, you know, this may be just some wishful thinking on my part, but I've got a gut feeling that Ethelred might kick the bucket soon.
I hope so.
I think I mean, yeah, obviously we want him to. I think, though, there's, for some reason, his, like, storyline this season feels a bit, like, unneeded. I think he's kind of going off in a direction where it's like, okay, it just feels like it's making it easier to, like, get rid of him at a certain point because he's mm-hmm. not central to this idea of, like, a United Wessex or to Ethel Fled and her story. I don't know. It just feels like it might be easier to get rid of him now. Mm. He's lost his power. He's lost the respect of his people. I don't know. Maybe his time will finally be up. And I think it's either him or Erebwolf this who dies next, in my opinion, because they're both just making bad choices left and right.
Well, from your lips to Frigga's ears, because I would love nothing more than to see them kick the bucket. I gotta say, like, as much as I'm enjoying Aelswyth this season, which is a surprising amount, I'm worried about her. Edward, I know, but, like, Edward clearly doesn't give a shit. And Ald Helm is in his ear, you know, telling him to sacrifice his sister and Mercia for the crown. So I feel like if they, like, catch wind of how deep her insubordination goes, she could be in real danger. Like, I can't imagine mm-hmm. Edward's going to react well to her calling on a different king to clean up his mess. That I respected the move, but it also made me worry that she's, you know, could be in real danger. Plus, I'm also very nervous that the whole Cookham crew has sort of made their way through so many battles with, like, their first loss being Bayoka, really. So I'm worried about their longevity. So I'm, like, priming myself for the loss of, like, Osferth or Citric for, like, a particularly devastating blow.
No, because, that would be cool.
I know, but, like, I feel like you could kill off either of those characters and it would be, like, maximum emotional impact without being, like, a huge plot changer, which usually means you're in trouble. So, I don't know. I'm worried.
I mean, I'm always worried about the Cookham crew, to be honest, because they're just, like, so fun and enjoyable to watch. So I just assume anything that's good is going to be taken away from me.
I know.
Yeah, I guess they'll always be in the Viking Death Pool. Not because we want them there, though.
Right, because we fear for them.
Now, this is clearly a very serious podcast about a very serious show, but sometimes it's nice to indulge in a little thirst. It's 2020. The world is on fire. Honestly, we deserve this. So this is our time to celebrate the thirstiest moments that really blew our skirts up this week. Alyssa, I mean, do I need to ask, like, was there anything that really did it for you?
Well, here's the thing. Like, this is an episode that's largely about grief. So thankfully, we can deem it not horny in the least, which is good. There's a time and a place. However, we do need to praise Finnan and his emotional intelligence in this episode, which is sexy in its own way.
Yes.
You know, it's, you gotta.
It's like the hottest thing.
Exactly. You can have the muscles, but, you know, if there's nothing in the head to go along with it, then who cares? So we stand an emotionally healthy man. So that was the hottest thing about the episode.
That's a good find. I think this episode for me was just as dry as the desert. But honestly, I'm not mad about that. Like you said, this was an episode about grief. You know, Bayoka died. We need to show some damn respect by not getting too horny.
There you go. We can turn it off for an episode. It's fine. Since we recorded our previous seasons, the world has changed a little bit. Life has ground to a halt, and we're just doing our best not to lose our minds in quarantine. So goodbye, Geek Out, and welcome to Self-Care Corner, where we talk about what we're reading, watching, and doing to stave off the seemingly endless alone time. Jessica, what you doing to not get the core madness?
Okay, so I want to, like, first off say I am not here for all of the jokes about, oh, I'm going to gain, like, the quarantine 15. You know what I mean? Like, all the jokes about, like, gaining weight and everything, because it's just, like, honestly, we're all too emotionally traumatized and there's too much stress and there's a lot more important things to worry about. So it's like, give yourself a break and give other people a break.
Right. It's okay if your body changes a little bit in quarantine. It's not the end of the world. Like, you're going through a traumatic event. Like, things are going to be weird. Things are going
to
be different.
Yeah. Whatever you need to do to kind of stay healthy mentally, and as healthy as you can be, like, physically. Like, you know, obviously if you eat better food, you're going to feel better. But also, if you want to eat cereal at, like, midnight, I've been doing that for, right. like, 4 weeks straight.
There you go.
I think that said, I'm, like, super into tennis right now. Like, I played when I was younger, and I kind of just, like, it dropped off. Mm-hmm. But tennis is, like, such a good social distancing sport because you can play with a friend, but, like, you're definitely 6 feet away from each other at all times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just it's a nice, like, way to kind of release some, like, stress. And I've had trouble, like, sleeping, obviously. And I think, you know, if you're just stuck in the house all day and you're laying around, like, it is going to, like, affect your sleep eventually. And so I find that if I can, like, tire myself out, it does not take much to tire myself out. It's like a 30-minute, like, game, like a 30-minute volleying session. It's like, okay, I'm done for, like, a week.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, if you're looking to, like, you know, do some exercise and, like, you know, working out by yourself is just not for you because it's, like, not for me, maybe try tennis. I don't know. There should be some tennis courts around open somewhere. Or you can just hit a tennis ball against a wall. I don't know. But
who cares about getting your security deposit back? Just hit it against the wall.
Hit it against your wall in your apartment.
Your neighbors will love it.
It lets out a lot of aggression, I will say. Like, just hit something.
Yeah. That makes sense to me.
What about you, Alyssa?
I feel like I'm, like, falling in on a lot of, like, quarantine trends, which I'm not proud of, but like they're all trends that I really like and are comforting. So, like, why not? Although I will say I was obsessed with her before all this started. I've been, like, getting really into Alison Roman's cooking. I love her videos. I love her cookbooks. Have you like read any of her cookbooks or, like, heard of her recipes or anything like that?
I have not. Tell me.
Okay. She is a writer for the New York Times, and she also has a couple of cookbooks. And basically she writes a lot of the recipes that she's created are all simple enough that they aren't super intimidating and they don't have a ton of, like, crazy ingredients that you have to go out and buy. Like, you're not going to have to go get, like, you know, polenta and cardamom pods or whatever to, like, make her stuff. But she does a really good job of, like, making them like, quote unquote, fancy enough that you feel like you're making something special in a way that's not exhausting. So I've been, like, cooking through her cookbooks, and she's amazing and everything is delicious. She has a lemon turmeric tea cake that is the best thing I've ever eaten, possibly. Mm. So I've been doing that to try and, like, not just order takeout while I'm in quarantine, because that can become an expensive and unhealthy habit pretty quickly. And also I've been binging the new show Normal People. It's a real devastating, like, Irish romance, and it's so good. I don't know if you've read the book. It was kind of, like, a big thing last year, and I loved the book, and they're doing a really beautiful adaptation. And, like, I suggest it wholeheartedly, but only if you don't mind being, like, emotionally devastated at the same time, though. So maybe not a quarantine watch, but also definitely watch it because I want to talk about it.
Well, okay, here's the thing, though. Like, sometimes I like to watch something because I know it's going to be a good cry, and that's, like, really cleansing and, like, makes you feel good.
Yeah, you will weep over Connell and Marianne. You need to, you'll cry. I've cried.
So the guy's name is Connell?
Yeah, Connell and Marianne, and they're, like, these tortured lovers who just can't get their shit together, and it's so good. So good. But okay, so
you had me at Connell and Irish.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll totally watch it this weekend because I do think it's, like, good to kind of, again, that's, like, a stress reliever where you don't really have to do anything, just sit and, like, let your emotions take over. So
it's catharsis.
Also, I'm not, like, I'm not around anyone, so if I have, like, ugly splotchy, you know, face from crying so much, who cares? Like,
there you go.
Let the snot run.
Now's the time. Alright guys, if you want to hear more of our bullshitting, check us out on Twitter or over at Sci-Fi Wire Fangirls. Also, don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave us a nice review wherever you get your podcasts.
And until next time, destiny is all, bitches.